I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold.
Is it possible to build a world economy that actually stops climate change? Can we continue to pursue continuous economic growth in a way that also nourishes ecosystems and saves our planet?
In this episode, we confront the infectious optimism of Dr. Barbara Buchner, Executive Director of Climate Finance at the Climate Policy Initiative. Barbara believes wholeheartedly that we can solve climate change, address economic disparity, and prosper like never before.
Here's Barbara.
Okay, well, my name is Barbara Buchner. I grew up in Austria, as you maybe can hear, which is a very beautiful but small country that is actually blessed by a lot of natural resources and a high quality of life. And I really grew up, knowing that protecting the environment and being careful about resources was just a normal behavior. It was mainstreamed into my daily behavior from when I was very little. And again, it seemed to me that the normal way of life. However, when I was 11, there was the nuclear accident in Chernobyl, and please no counting or Googling dates, but we could not leave the house for days. And for the rest of the summer, we were basically not allowed to play outside. There were nuclear clouds that had left radioactive dust on the streets. And so we were also not allowed to, eat certain vegetables, most of all mushrooms, which actually are very nice in Austria. And so that clearly has had a very strong impact. This early experience has had a very strong impact on how precious the environment is, and it has really shaped my worldview and ultimately also my career trajectory. I got deeply concerned about the environment, and even more so when I learned about global warming, and I promised myself that I would do what I could to help save our world. But I realized also pretty early on that, economics is at the underpinning of how we function. And so I studied economics in order to really understand the incentives that we have in order to change behaviors and in order to make sure what I know today, that actually protecting the planet is good for the planet, but it's good for the people and good for the business. So this is a little bit where I come from. And just where I'm now, I lead now since a little over 10 years, an advisory and analytic organization called Climate Policy Initiative. We work with governments, with businesses and financial institutions to really drive economic growth, again, while addressing climate change, but having this understanding, again, that obviously what matters for many countries, particularly the poorer ones, is, getting a certain, standard of economic quality. And we have been working around several pillars of specific research. We are known for tracking sustainable investment trends. We are known for identifying innovative business models and also for supporting the solutions that can really drive a transition to a low carbon, climate resilient, inclusive economy. And again, this basically is my baby. I've helped to start this organization. So it was a startup in 2009 when I joined at the end of the year of 2009. And I'm very committed to the mission and the goals of our organization and to making sure that we really can have an impact.
That's a fascinating set of goals that you have. So often we think of economic growth as something that is actually driving climate change, not necessarily solving climate change. Could you speak a little bit to that seemingly inherent contradiction and how you propose to solve it?
Yeah, well, I think, this is what I feel what we need is a real shift in a transformation how we run our economies. So you certainly are right that the fact that we do have climate change today is triggered by a lot of industrial practices and a lot of the ways our energy system and our all our productive systems, our agriculture had been set up, a way that have led to very high man-made greenhouse gas emissions, and that really have are responsible for a lot of the implications that we see today from climate change. But at the same time, I think we also are known for what human behavior is known for is innovation and coming up with, you know, advances in technology. So what we really have seen over the last decades is that there has been a lot of, as we have gotten to understand better the implications of some of the traditional fossil fuel-based ways of running our economies, we have also seen a lot of innovation in technologies that really harness the, you know, resources like natural resources like solar or wind or hydro in a better way. And so what we see today actually is that economic growth and climate action can go hand in hand. We really see that basically behaving more environmental friendly and, you know, increasing the ambition on climate action can actually offer trillions of economic benefits going forward. There's some studies that highlight that there is at least $26 trillion in economic benefits that are offered through more environmental friendly ways of running our economies by 2030, and that's a conservative estimate. So I think that just shows that while at the outset, you know, you certainly are right, this is like something how we grew up, but I think we've made a lot of progress and we just need to make sure that we share that knowledge and increase awareness about the opportunities and basically change the narrative that climate action is not necessarily bad for our economies or for our businesses, but that climate action actually, again, can be good for business, for the planet, and for the people.
I wonder, there's a lot there, and it's true that we seem to be inventing new technologies and, you know, even investing now slowly in new technologies that help the environment. But oftentimes it feels like some of these, greenwashing happens sometimes. And then also, you know, how do we maintain the integrity of the whole company? So what I'm pointing to is sometimes companies will say, yes, we're building everything solar, and in the back door they're dumping all of their waste, and so you have kind of split personality even within the company. And is there an economic model or incentives or policies that you advocate to kind of maintain that full integrity toward the environment?
Well, I think at the core of that is transparency. I think we need to make sure that we really understand the full picture and not only the nice, the green part of investments that you do as a business, but you need to understand the full implications of companies, of financial institutions, of how government, how all of us operate. So for me, it's been always a core mandate is really kind of what you can't measure, you can't manage. So you need to, what we've been asking for and where we've been working a lot is really kind of providing the best available data to really understand what are the full implications of everyone's business, of everyone's economic activities. And that is also necessary because, you know, we are all at the moment what we are trying to move towards to, and we've seen a lot of progress from both public and private actors, is net zero targets. Net zero targets already shows you that it's not always possible to fully get to zero in your let's say, balance of emissions. But you can do a lot to really balance, you know, kind of reduce more, capture more through forestry, through carbon capture and storage and others, while at the same time really make sure that you are really kind of trying to shift from the harmful ways, you know, fossil fuel based ways towards greener ways. So I think in order to avoid the greenwashing and really be clear, I think first key component is really transparency is in my opinion, and again, not only my opinion, is like mandatory full disclosure of all, in my case, what we are working on mostly investments, really trying to show, you know, where you are, where your companies are investing is, but most more generally, again, where is your power coming from? It's not only the good ones. We've been doing a lot of tracking on investments in climate finance. Well, we have seen, it's been fantastic. The, you know, green investments are continuing to go up, but at the same time, we continue to see investments in fossil fuel activities. So these are things that you need to, you know, you need the comprehensive picture of really what's going on. And that for me is the basis of every real change that we will be able to achieve.
Fantastic what I hear, you know, sort of it's the transparency issue, it's one of the barriers, I guess. What are the other major barriers you're like running into in forming what I hear is a more inclusive economy and more fair and sustainable economy you're desiring or you're working on?
Well, again, I think there we maybe let me just start from what we see based on the work that we've been doing around investments. So we see kind of three buckets of barriers. I think one is really knowledge barriers that very often, you know, it's just hard for people, you know, companies in financial institutions and organizations change and, you know, they're used to investing in coal. So, you know, investing in a new technology, while it might be cheaper by now, or at least competitive, is just a change. So knowledge is a barrier. So again, I think having a better information, having better communication and really more, again, transparency is important. I think the second thing we see is regulatory barriers. So we see very often, oh, there are still subsidies for fossil fuels. Well, that's not a very good incentive in order to shift. And there, you know, and maybe there should be some other incentives in order to increase, you know, renewable energy or, you know, energy efficiency in buildings, you know. So how can we make sure that that happens? So I think that's the second bucket we see. And then the third one is really around risks. And that is something, you know, very often also perceived risks. So again, it seems to be more risky to invest in energy efficiency because the revenues basically come at the later time. So you will be saving money, but you're not sure at the beginning, when will that happen? Will I really save money by investing into an energy efficiency or an energy efficient appliance, even, you know, on my, you know, on a personal level. So there is very often just like these areas where you got to make sure that you address the risks and come up with also financial or a new business models that can basically address the real or perceived risks that people like investors see, and really make sure that there's solutions that help you scale investments, particularly in the areas that are the more challenging one. And you know, obviously this all is related then also to is that happening in an inclusive way? You know, does everyone has access to funding to invest into, you know, does a small holder, a farmer here in the US or, you know, in Africa actually have access to invest into technologies that are available? So I think there is this access to funding, which is somehow related to the risk point, but there is, you know, specific issues obviously that are related more to the just transition challenges, as we say it. But again, I think that there is the COVID crisis in a way has brought all these different components together, and certainly is trying at least to show that, you know, rebuilding better or building forward better, as we like to call it, actually is a way to really kind of create a more inclusive future, which again and brings more jobs, but also brings kind of a better environment and brings kind of a longer term prosperity to the people.
I want to go back to one of the things you said about investments in green technology often pay off more slowly or longer term investment. And oftentimes our experience has been that they'll be rejected because they're not paying off in 3 to 5 years. Maybe it's more like 8 to 10 years. And it seemed like there's a huge role for policy making to get involved here and create early incentives or tax breaks or, you know, more direct ways that counterbalance that long term or incentivize that long term thinking. How involved are you in actually changing policy, and you know, are there specific policies that you're out to change in order to incentivize green investment?
That's again, I think policies is one of the key components that we need. We have in my organization since our beginnings climate policy initiative, I've been trying to really focus on how can we basically help governments make their policies more effective. So we've been evaluating really, you know, how can you create the right enabling environment for the good things to happen, and how can you do that? So we've been doing that in a number of countries been really having some good successes in some of our countries where we have offices, like in Brazil or in Indonesia, where we've been like working on fiscal incentives, for example, or or in India as well, where we've been trying to kind of show how you can actually incentivize renewable energy. But I think the other thing we've been doing in addition to, you know, really trying to show which policies are more effective and how can we basically share knowledge with policymakers around the world on how to, you know, replicate best practices quickly, because I think, again, that's one of the knowledge issues that we see. We've been trying to work on the other side of that. I think you need the enabling environment through policies, but you also need to have the kind of the business models or the tools that then, you know, basically allow you to address some of the risks. And in that context, we've been running kind of an incubator, an accelerator, which is this global innovation lab for climate finance, which we run since 2014, and which really is a public-private initiative that brings together investors from a number of public and private financial institutions with the goal of helping basically develop more innovative financial solutions that can unlock private investment at scale, because we need the private sector and particularly the capital investment, capital from the private sector, in order to really fill the investment gap that we see today. That is the only way that will allow us to close the gap, but also to kind of do it at the speed and scale that's needed in order to address issues. So I think to your questions, both, I think policies, trying to understand which ones are effective, how can we share that, the best practices, and on the other side, really kind of financial instruments and more innovative business models that really can enable private investment at scale is something that is very close to my organization and certainly also my heart.
I'm intrigued when you say private investments. What kind of private investments could there probably not look for profit?
Well, that is, yeah. I'm not so sure that she's saying private investment not for profit. She's saying private investment that profits that is also sustainable.
Right, but it's
right? Is that right?
That is right. This is, you know, coming back to why did I study economics? Because I wanted to make sure that we can come up, you know, with ways that really attract everyone, you know, across the financial ecosystem into doing the right choices. And not only because it's a good thing to do and you have your voluntary targets, but because it makes business sense. We are, to be frank, you know, on the renewable energy side, we are almost like everywhere around the world in a position where the prices of technologies have been declining so quickly that they're actually, you know, solar, wind is competitive in most of the geographies with traditional fossil fuel. So this is where we've seen the private sector really kind of stepping up, making investments as one of the examples, actually, even in the US here over the last few years, where there was not such a strong focus on climate policy nationally. Private sector has made record investments in renewable energy just because it makes sense. You know, in addition, it makes business sense. But I think what we're trying to do, where we need more of these innovative business models, is where you are in the harder sectors, in the harder areas. You know, we are in agriculture, we are in adaptation. We need to understand how can we actually come up with the right business models that again, you know, address some of the risks that private investors see, but at the same time, you know, may attract them to these opportunities and really make sure that ultimately, you know, that this becomes like a normal investment practice as we've seen in the renewable energy context.
I think we have a couple of questions now popping up. And you have a growth question, have you?
Well, I just, you know, I understand the idea of incentivizing these longer term investments and having a more sustainable investment structure. But I wonder how, for our listeners, all of us who believe that growth cannot be unlimited. In other words, we can't keep growing and growing and growing in a resource limited world. My question is, how do you deal with that, you know, very finite set of resource limitations? Or is growth, are you redefining what growth means altogether?
That is a very good question. I do think it is redefining what growth means. I think it is about making more efficient, more effective, you know, more inclusive growth. I think it is still about, you know, giving and allowing particularly those countries who are not yet at the levels of a developed country to you know, get to the quality of life that every one of us should have. So I think it is there, but it is doing that in a smarter way, in a way that really makes better use of our resources, that, you know, for example, in the context of land use, we've been working on concepts that we call protection and production, which means you basically protect the environment by having a more intensive production, but that you still do that in a way that over time protects environment. So while you basically get higher yields per hectare, same time you do it in a way that still allows you to protect the environment for the next generations. So I don't think we have all the answers yet, but I do think it is about redefining growth and making smarter and more efficient use of the resources we have. And most of all, you know, making sure that we reduce the as we call them, the external effects, externalities of some of the way we produce or we consume, you know, all different types of goods and, you know, from food to fossil, you know, to fuel to everything.
Is there a particular industry that you think, one, is really good at doing this, you know, a particular industry that's really moving toward a sustainable world and inclusive world? And by contrast, is there a particular industry or set of businesses that you think are particularly slow at adopting sustainable technology?
That's a good question. I mean, again, I think it's been all triggered by progress and innovation in the technologies. I think the energy industry has been certainly at the forefront. You know, moving towards a more sustainable, you know, energy system across the world is something which I think is happening. It's certainly, I think, the success story that we've seen also in terms of how much money is flowing into, you know, sustainable energy. At the same time, I think the harder areas, sectors or industries, I think is some of the, you know, like the cement industries where you just require a lot of electricity, or some of the other manufacturing industries. So really these industries, and I think, again, you can see actually a lot of desire to make progress now, but certainly that's where we need much more work and innovation to get there. And, you know, there is a lot of experimentation going on at the moment with, you know, artificial hydrogen or other types of technologies to get there. But I think this is kind of, this is what we see kind of at the two ends. And I think what we try to do is really kind of help make progress also in the more difficult industries and sectors.
When you shared your story about growing up in Austria, actually, by the way, I grew up in southern Germany, so very near to Austria. And you're right, you know, Chernobyl happened, I guess you were 10, I think I was 10, you were 11. And I had exactly the same experience where I was not allowed to go outside. I loved to play in the rain, no more, you know, it was shocking to me. No milk products, no mushrooms, you know, you name it. And I think it really did something to me as a human being. It was like, you know, really shocking at that young age. And it's also, it made me, I think, who I am today and with the choices I've done for my professional career, like not just become an architect, but green architect, you know, deep in the weeds, so to say, engaged in this. I think to point out the beautiful world we have and try to support the transformation change we need, right? And I wanted to ask you, is this personal experience of Chernobyl, it's very clear it made you who you are, but Do we need that kind of shock, you know, to like turn around completely? Because it seems like we keep on discussing how, you know, good solutions we have and all this innovation we have and long-term thinking and, but yeah, very much based in short-term decision makings, you know, most of the time, quite frankly, still. So do we need this kind of shock? Do we need more COVID crises, so to say, to like make us wake up, to like really change around the course of where our boat is going?
Excellent question. And to be frank, unfortunately, I think we needed a few shocks. I think now we have actually, you know, what else do we need after COVID? I think COVID has highlighted really, you know, where we are and that, you know, our social systems and our economic systems just like need a real overhaul. But I think sometimes, you know, it's just our human behavior to, you know, continue a pathway that we've had and, you know, go after the easier, you know, profits. Again, in working with investors and in our earlier years of our work, you know, they all have said, look, we have 5-year cycles. So, you know, we don't look after, you know, more than 5 years ahead of our investment. So if it doesn't pay off, then it doesn't make sense. You know, look at the politicians again, they're like have re-election cycles. So very often there is nothing that changes really the future decisions. But I feel again, and I've been in this for a long time, because again, I think very similar to what I hear from you, I fully believe that we need to move into a you know, into a better future. So I feel I've never seen so much support and consensus for the overarching goal that we have. I do think what we really need now is like just political leadership and make sure that there is really, you know, we have the facts, we have the solutions. I mean, I just feel it is time to, you know, to stop finding excuses of why we need to postpone, but really have leadership. I think all of us can do something. You know, I think it's, you know, you made your choices for you know, what you work on. I think we can make our choices on what we eat, what we drive or not, you know, where we basically, you know, how we live. So I think it is not anymore only that, you know, we need the big shocks and we need like the big kind of actors to drive decision. But I feel we need a coordinated and concerted effort on really kind of getting there. But again, I feel if COVID hasn't been the shock, then I think we are in a real trouble, because I think COVID really has shown you that we need to, you know, understand better the nexus between nature, you know, our economy, biodiversity, everything. So I very much hope that this is the final shock that we needed and that will actually help us make the changes now, because it is a real wake-up call, basically, for our systems to be better prepared.
Is there anything we haven't asked you? What do you would really like to bring out and say to the listeners?
Let's stop fossil fuel now.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Let's just exit.
It's good to do more of the green, but let's stop the harmful activities, and we need to stop that as soon as possible.
Barbara Buchner.
It was interesting in the conversation, the more she talked about it, the more questions came
right.
up.
I kept having more questions.
She has a nice way of laying it out, right? What are the three, how do you say, the main problems or the three main...
Three buckets of barriers.
Barriers, here we go. So this was knowledge, regulations, and risks.
Right.
And so throughout the presentation, or throughout the conversation, I was like, okay, is this now risk? Is this a knowledge problem, or is it more in the risk category? I was trying to figure out, you know, how to put that approach in... how it could serve in all these, as your question in the end, with all the frameworks, like how could it play out? Like how could it help us to sort of go through the jungle, so to say?
Mm-hmm.
And it is quite a jungle out there. What kind of, how do you measure this? What kind of framework is applied? And then we need a new kind of measurement. And so what exactly is success?
Mm-hmm. But I thought it was really cool, one of the points she made, which is, every model can produce almost any result, based on like the parameters you put into that model. And I thought that was a really interesting point. She's like, whatever model you're dealing with, the parameters are inclusivity and sustainability. And if you're not achieving inclusivity and sustainability, you gotta adjust. But it was very practical the way she talked about this. You know, I think this idea of going, you know, basically case by case and saying, what can we do to make this a greener and more inclusive investment strategy for this country and for that country and for that country, and try to stave off kind of rampant growth with no thought.
You know what triggered me, that when she said that, something was triggered inside me where it's like, yeah, we create this. You know, the economy isn't something which is there like a tree. It just doesn't grow. Mm-hmm. We constructed it, we can deconstruct it, and we have to deconstruct it into whatever country, as she pointed out, where they go, whatever country is dealing with what. So we can now create economies specifically for whatever is needed. And we have to have a world economy, mm-hmm. kind of the overarching, which is basically the limits of growth. Yeah, there is no way we have the resources we are currently using.
Right, unless you redefine what growth is. And I think exactly. That's what she's talking about too, is
yes.
Not just growth in that more products, more GNP, more everything, but maybe faster, more efficient, more effective. You know, those are also types of growth, maybe not as measurable as GDP or GNP.
Right. Yeah, and of course the common thing I can really relate with her is our probably very, very similar experience we both had as children, which was really shocking, you know, because in that age you didn't know what nuclear even means, or mm-hmm. how can that possibly be harmful to you, you know, and all of a sudden the things you love most become dangerous, and you're not allowed anymore to do it, and you don't understand, and that there is this helplessness, you know, which I experienced in those days, which I think this is within our generation. I think there is some sort of urge and desire to make things differently, and yet there's also a bit of a helplessness because things have grown so rapidly and they have become so complex. It's not easy to be small and tangible mm-hmm. and specific.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting that both of you kind of had that dramatic experience, and so did so many hundreds of thousands of other
all
people,
Europeans.
Right? But at the same time, you know, it's like almost any of these dramatic experiences, including COVID, where it's almost as though we're just kind of broadening our sense of reality to include yet another disaster. And, you know, I mean, it's just like Chernobyl was a disaster that we included, and it didn't really galvanize a few people against nuclear energy, but it really didn't galvanize a movement that was lasting. And I'm wondering when it is that we are going to actually just say, enough is enough, we have to solve this problem now, and just do it. And, you know, maybe it's incremental the way she's talking about, you know, kind of picking off the early growers and changing their methodologies while we developed countries figure ourselves out. And maybe it's, you know, maybe it is just until everyone really feels their survivability at stake. I don't know.
You
know?
Well, Mel, if you ask a French if they had an experience about Chernobyl, they have not, because the French government at that time decided Chernobyl was not happening in their country. But, you know, when you were on the German side or on the Austrian or Swiss side, you had the Chernobyl experience. But in France, the nuclear cloud was not coming to France. But
that's
it definitely was.
No, you know? but it's also interesting.
They have proofs.
She also said we need strong political committed leaders. And that wasn't always my first go-to, is look to the political leadership to solve some of these problems. But clearly it's part of the solution, good political leaders that are committed to inclusive and sustainable economies.
Let's just hope for now that this year will bring us a lot of change. We're an independent, listener-supported podcast.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul.
Support us by rating this episode and sharing with all your friends.
And to learn more, join us at potofgold.world.
I'm Stephanie Overbach.
And I'm Mel Wymore.
Thanks for listening.